The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Delighted to welcome Daniel Harris. Morning, Daniel.
Hello.
Let's start with Manchester City. 10 points clear after that 3-1 win at Goodison Park last night. This thing is turning into a procession.
Yeah, it is. It's funny what's happened with City, really, because I said on here like quite some time ago that Guardiola's kind of great team, the first great team of his City, was finished. And that to me seemed like a fairly reasonable thing to say, because Vincent Kompany had left. Then Sergio Aguero hardly ever plays now, and Fernandinho hardly ever plays now. And when you lose players of that quality, you have to replace them. And he hadn't really yet replaced them. They don't really have a reliable centre-forward. They haven't found someone like Fernandinho who can cover that space in front of the back four, make the right fouls at the right time. So it seemed like they needed to buy some players. But what has been surprising is how they've just rebuilt without doing that. And I think, and they've done it so quickly, and I think what's happened is that for the first time, Guardiola has 11 players who can play. He doesn't have any of this Otamendi, Mangala nonsense. He just has 11 excellent footballers. And when I say that, I include the goalkeeper, who is not the greatest at actually keeping goal, but he is a fantastic footballer. But within that, most importantly, he's got four defenders, but particularly the centre-backs, who can actually defend. And because that's the case, it means that the six players in front of them, he can pick whichever six he fancies and put them in whichever positions he fancies, whether he plays Phil Foden on the right, on the left, number 10, false nine, Raheem Sterling can play on the right or on the left, Bernardo Silva can play in midfield, he can play on the wide, doesn't matter. And he can just pick six good footballers to go out there and be better at football than the other team. And the reason he can do that is because the defence is just defending sensibly. And Guardiola's never had that before. And I mean, he didn't have that when he was at Barcelona, when he had the greatest team that we've ever seen, probably. He didn't have four defenders who could all be relied upon to defend properly, to defend one-on-one. It didn't make any difference because you couldn't get them. You couldn't get the ball to get them. But it's not possible to recreate the greatest midfield of all time that he had and Messi. So that's, in my opinion, the reason why there have been league titles that he hasn't won with City, why he hasn't won the European Cup, didn't win the European Cup with Bayern or with City. But because you can't, eventually you will be asked to defend, and a quality team will score goals against you if you don't have good defenders. But now he does have defenders. He's just defending sensibly. I don't think Kyle Walker is a brilliant defender. I don't think João Cancelo is a brilliant defender, but they're good enough defenders so that their ability on the ball is able to take over. And they got really lucky that they had that week off when they didn't play this Everton game that they were meant to play. And then the run that they went on, they played seven of the bottom nine. Chelsea, when Frank Lampard was preparing to get fired, and Villa, a game that they basically had that ludicrous benefit of a decision. But you've still got to win those games. They use them to play their way into form. And now it's very hard to see a game that they're not going to win.
Are you concerned about them completely running away with it even again next season, just given the fact that they might go out and sign that number nine that you talk about there?
No. I'm not worried about what's going to happen next season. I think the question this season is how many trophies they're going to win. The league is over. They're in the final of the League Cup where they've got to play Tottenham. You'd expect them to win that. In the Champions League, there'll be 50-50 worst case scenario against anyone. I mean, I don't think they're unbeatable. The defenders are good. They're not the greatest defenders we've ever seen, but they're competent, and that was all that you felt it would take for them to be a good bet against anyone. But it's going to depend who they play. I mean, they could lose to PSG, they could lose to Liverpool, they could lose to Bayern Munich in Europe, but they could also beat those teams. They could also avoid those teams. It's cup competition. But it is clear that everything is available. If they do go out and sign that striker, yeah, I mean, it depends who it is. I mean, obviously Mbappe and Haaland are the two strikers who any team would want. Whether City are going to spend the money buying them, whether they're the kind of player that Pep Guardiola wants, whether they would leave to go to City, who knows? But yeah, they would improve with those players. But part of the reason it's working at City at the moment, I think, is because they don't have a focal point centre forward. They just have players that appear in those positions, which is making them really hard to mark. And it's enabling them to dominate teams in midfield because they've got an extra player, whether it's a fullback like Cancelo coming into midfield, or whether it's a player like Gabriel Jesus or Phil Foden or Sterling or Mahrez or whoever it is, they're playing centre forward, isn't playing up against the defenders in the way that a centre forward they might sign would like to.
Yeah, for sure. As a football lover, maybe not as a Manchester United fan as such here, but where do you want to see Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe end up?
I don't know. I mean, you kind of always feel that you don't want players as good as Mbappe to be kicking about at Paris Saint-Germain, playing in the Paris Saint-Germain win every season, apart from when Unai Emery is the manager, and hoping to get somewhere in the Champions League. So, from a football lover's perspective, you would like Mbappe to just go to a competitive league. Haaland, I mean, I'm not sure what's going to happen with Haaland, but I think that as a Manchester United supporter, it would be bad news for him to turn up in the Premier League playing for anyone other than the team that you support, because he's just a goal machine. It reminds me a little bit of those two, of when Van Nistelrooy and Henri were both in the Premier League, where you had just one absolute goal machine and another player who gives you a little bit more, but is maybe not quite as deadly in front of goal in the big moments. So, but is clearly a much purer footballer. And I think that's what we've got here, where you've got Haaland, who just, if you have him, it just means goals and goals and goals and goals. But Mbappe just gives you a little bit extra and something a little bit different, but probably not quite as many reliable goals just all the time against everyone.
Was there ever anything in that Haaland to Manchester United talk? I mean, the Solskjaer link is obviously a very obvious one.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be. I'm sure United wanted him and he decided against it. And my guess is that if Haaland is available this summer, then I'm sure United would like to buy him. Whether the board will release enough money to buy him is who knows. Because on the one hand, they did it for Pogba because I think they felt that commercially Pogba would justify the fee in the amount of sponsorship he would bring to the club. They wouldn't pay the money for Jadon Sancho, who was also someone you thought commercially would probably be quite valuable, but they wouldn't pay the money for him. And in general, they've been looking at a net spend of about 60 million quid every summer, so they'd need to sell some players to get Haaland. But I'm sure they did try and buy Haaland the last time, and they might also decide that if Haaland can be bought, then that is just something that has to be done because it immediately elevates your team to contenders for everything. And that is worth some money, so they might consider it worth that speculation. But signing Haaland is also contingent on perhaps Dortmund finishing outside the Champions League spots in Germany, which is possible, but him wanting to come. And that's going to depend on what offers he has. The Spanish clubs probably couldn't afford him. PSG probably wouldn't spend the money on him, which then might just bring it down to English clubs who, and then you're probably looking at City, do need a centre-forward, but they might decide that the kind of football they play, Haaland is not quite their guy, even though he has goals, but they might decide that you'd have to be mad not to buy him. Chelsea probably could use him because he's better than what they've got, but they don't particularly need to go and spend their money on another forward. But again, like, they're just certain players that if they are available to you, then you have to do whatever it takes to buy them, and Haaland is definitely one of them.
Daniel, there's a few mentions of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his future as Manchester United manager on the back page of this morning. Contract up in 2022. But I guess the narrative is often around his semi-final defeats with United last season. How much do you buy this idea that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needs a trophy badly in order to secure his future with United? Because, you know, they have Real Sociedad in the Europa League tonight and games like that take on extra importance. So do you buy this, you know, idea that even if they finish second in the Premier League this year behind an impressive Man City, but don't win a trophy, that maybe his job could be at risk?
I don't think it will be that. No. If they finish second, but from here to there, that means that they'd probably amass quite a lot of points between now and then, and that would be a significant improvement. It wouldn't be where United want to be, but if you look at United's team now, you would say, not good enough to win the league, good enough to win a cup competition. And you're not going to fire a manager for not winning a cup competition, generally. I mean, because it's a cup competition and it's understood that you're talking about one-off games, and when you're deciding whether you think that someone is the right man to take a club forward, winning or losing tight one-off games is generally not the way that you would look at it. So for me, I was pleased that Van Gaal got fired, even though it was immediately after United won the cup, because I couldn't see a route for the team that he was trying to build and the players that he had collected to take United to be anywhere where they want to be. And if you look at the squad now, Solskjaer is still undoing the mess that Van Gaal caused. Whereas looking at what Solskjaer's done, you mentioned the semi-finals. If you look at the semi-finals individually, even those, you can see progress through them. So the first one under him was the League Cup final against City, where they got absolutely outplayed at home in the first leg. We're lucky to still be in the tie. Won the second leg, but got outplayed in that as well, if we're being real. So that was a bad one. But then the one after that, the Cup semi-final against Chelsea, they were absolutely exhausted and chasing top four in the league. So you could make an excuse for them in that one too. Then the one after against Sevilla, they played really well. Like, that was some of the best football they've played under Solskjaer, some of the best football they've played since Fergie left, and one of the best games United have been involved in since Fergie left. And it, to me, looked like progress. At the key moments, the finishing and the defending weren't good enough, which brings us back to the need to sign a centre-forward or not, and to sign a centre-back or not. But they improved through that one. And then against City in the League Cup semi-final, that was a marginal game. City played really well that night, and United stayed with them. A little bit more composure and maturity in the final third. And United had some good situations, but they couldn't quite take advantage of them. And City got the first goal that was bundled in from a corner. So I would say that their ability to go into that game, and they didn't go toe-to-toe with City. It would be wrong to say that they did, but they competed in that game. That wasn't a mismatch. They weren't outclassed in that game. They were beaten by a better team playing really well. And the stretch now is to get to the point where they can either play not so well and still win, or produce their best performance and actually win. And again, City, ultimately, City is still better than them. And if they have to play City in the FA Cup, then City are a better team. So you would say the likelihood was that City would win, but United would be good enough to beat them. The question is that about Ole keeping his job. Because if they collapse from now and they finish outside the top four, then it would be legitimate to say, thank you very much. Like, you've done a good job. You've taken a squad, a club that was absolutely on its arse and made it much better, but it needs someone to take it on from here. And that's, for me personally, when I've wanted rid of the managers who've succeeded Fergie, was when hope was lost, when I felt that these guys are not taking this team anywhere. I don't feel like that about Ole's team now. I can't deny that in the back of my head, I think, I wonder what the best possible manager would be able to do with this team. But Ole has built this team. It's still improving. It's turning from a good team into a very good team. That's the next step. And however good the manager is, that is not going to be possible without a couple of players. The defenders are not good enough. And how it's possible that better coaches than the ones that Ole had would get them defending better. I don't know. I've never seen Ole coach. I've never seen his coaches coach. So gobbing off on the internet about what level of a coach he is, to me, sounds a bit silly. I can only see the things that I can see. And what I can see is a team that is still improving, but needs that extra little bit of gas and needs probably, for me anyway, it needs a number six midfield player. It needs a centre-back. And then if Erling Haaland is around, you buy him. But I think if Haaland is not available to United, they'll probably try and go one more season with Cavani and then hope that Mason Greenwood is ready to take on the majority of the goal-scoring burden the season after that.
Some United fans will have seen the Maurizio Pochettino getting a job as maybe a missed boat and a missed opportunity to bring in an established and a definitely successful manager. But if you're Ed Woodward at the moment, just to be clear, do you give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer a new contract? And if so, for how long?
You wait and see what happens at the end of the season. If they collapse, then I guess you probably don't. You get a new manager if they collapse between now and then, because this is Ole's team now. It's got enough good players so that collapsing should not happen. But if they finish well, if they finish the season strongly, and if they keep producing their best, then you would say that he's earned the right to continue. You'd be also within your rights to harbour doubts about whether he was the man to take United the rest of the way. But ultimately, he's competing against Klopp and Guardiola, who are probably the best managers around. And it's perhaps, it may well be that no manager available to United is able to build a team as good as their teams because they're the best. And Guardiola also has the most money. And competing against a coach as good as Pep Guardiola with the most money in the league, I mean, good luck with that. That's very difficult for anyone. Liverpool managed to do it because the signings that they made were, they just basically hit the spot with a succession of signings, and Klopp's rabble-rousing genius elevated everything. And Ole is not a Klopp kind of personality, and he's not a Guardiola kind of tactician. He doesn't have Guardiola's kind of money, but then neither's Pochettino. Pochettino's best teams couldn't win leagues against Antonio Conte and Claudio Ranieri. So I think that Pochettino's an excellent manager. I think he did a brilliant job at Spurs, but I didn't feel that there was any kind of guarantee that if you gave him United's team and put him in against Klopp and Guardiola, you'd suddenly be celebrating league titles. I didn't see it like that, though I think Pochettino is good. So as long as I see Ole progressing, and to go back to the original question about the cups, a cup win would make a big difference because it makes a big difference to, mainly to the mentality of the team, to the mentality of the players, to know that they can win, to know that they can produce the big moments. But provided you see the team still improving and still able to perform at a high level, and I think we have seen that. We have seen that this team is capable of performing at a high level. A long time ago, beginning of the season, I think, you asked me what I thought United could do this season, and I said... I thought that they were good enough to beat any team at any time. Now the Champions League has started up again, started to feel a bit frustrating because United threw that away, threw qualification away. And I thought that it was more likely that they would do something in Europe than in the league because of what I said before, that they can beat anyone and it's a cup competition and you only have to produce on a few days. Whereas I didn't feel that they'd be capable of getting 90 points in the league. I thought if it was 82, 83 points, then they might be able to manage that. But it's now looking like it's going to be more than that. And I don't think they're good enough for that yet. But I do think they're at that level where they've got more than a puncher's chance against any team. So that was a massive oversight, getting knocked out of the Champions League in the way that they did. But they do look to have improved since then. Not enough, but they are getting better. And I mean, the thing that really it boils down to in that last game against Leipzig was that, oh, they picked the wrong team. He picked a really defensive team. He picked five at the back with Matic in front, and they struggled to get out and they lost the game in the first 20 minutes. He hasn't done that in a big game since. So the hope is that he's learned, but I do think we're at the point now where Ole needs to be brave. He needs to accept which players are not going to take him where he needs to go. And I think he knows that. I don't think he thinks that David De Gea is the future of this team, but David De Gea has been letting him down for 2 years. Maybe Dean Henderson isn't good enough to be a United goalkeeper, but at least we don't know. At least he tends not to toss them in quite the same way, and he tends to control his defence. You wouldn't get a situation where you got against West Brom, where you got against Everton, where you're conceding goals because the defence is defending 5 yards too deep. Whatever you know about Dean Henderson, it's that he will be shouting at the defenders to get them up the pitch. He needs a better centre-back or a better centre-back pairing than Lindelof and Maguire. Eric Bailly can't be relied upon, so it's hard to pick him. So he needs to do something about that, and he needs to stop taking Mason Greenwood off and keeping Anthony Martial on, because again, Anthony Martial's got loads of talent. We've all seen it, but he's now an age where the player that he is the player he's going to be. And there's going to be some good days, but he's also going to let you down on a lot of occasions. And the time has come the time came quite a while ago, actually, for Ole to be ruthless. Same with Fred. Fred doesn't make goals. He doesn't score goals. He's not a reliable passer. He can be good enough, but the majority of the time, he's not good enough. So again, Ole needs to take a view. And it's difficult this season because the game's come so fast that he needs to keep rotating. So he needs to keep playing players that are not the future. But ultimately, he needs to be brave with the teams that he picks. He needs to be ruthless with the players that aren't good enough. And if that's what happens, then I think there's a chance he can take this team on. And that's what I'd like to see in the next part of the season. Problem being that there are just so many games that you will be seeing players that you would prefer not to see.
Just lastly on Manchester United, Daniel, what are the excitement levels like for this Alex Ferguson documentary?
I mean, I have mixed feelings about this documentary. And I mean, the reasons I have mixed feelings partly are extremely selfish reasons. I make films and I'm insanely envious of people getting to make this film. So there is that. I would love to have made this film. I guess there's also a level of disappointment because I don't think that one episode, one film is enough. Like, he needs the Jordan treatment, and he needs the Jordan treatment from the best possible director. And in classic Fergie style, in the same way, there was a period where he was advising young players to sign with his son, because by amazing coincidence, he was the best manager around and his son was the best agent around. Now his son, by amazing coincidence, is the best film director around. And that is, I mean, they're a very talented family. I hope it's brilliant. I can't believe it will be as brilliant as it could have been and as it should have been with the best possible director. And I can't believe it will be as brilliant as it could have been and as it should have been if it was a multi-parter like Michael Jordan got. I think Fergie's story is probably a more interesting story than Michael Jordan. And Fergie is at least a more compelling interviewee than Michael Jordan. But I think, I wonder, I mean, because the thing with Michael Jordan was that there was one moment where the interviewer, the director, had him rattled and had him emotional. And then the camera zooms in on him and I'm shouting at the screen, ask him another question. And anyone, if you've made a documentary, you know that you get to a point where you're starting to ask some awkward questions and the ones that your interviewee doesn't really want to answer and they're on the ropes. And you're always mindful of maintaining the relationship because you need them to feel comfortable with you and secure with you so that they will answer all the questions that you want to ask. But it gets to a point, and you usually save it till the last interview where you're like, okay, I'm tipping all my cards into the middle here, because if I ask this stuff and it makes you uncomfortable and you decide that you don't answer them anymore, it doesn't matter because it's the end. And it felt like with the Jordan one, the director was either too much in his thrall so that he didn't want to ask those questions because he was just enjoying being with Jordan or was intimidated by Jordan, or he thought Jordan doesn't want to answer the question. But ultimately, Jordan had final cut on the doc. So if you ask him a question, he doesn't like the answer that he gave, he's going to say, no, I'm not doing it. But you ask that question, and then you ask another question, and then you ask another question, and you ask it in as many ways as you can until you get the best possible answers that you want. And it felt like in the Jordan doc, they didn't get that. Like, I loved all the old footage, but what was strange about the Jordan one also was that there was no context, nothing about Chicago, nothing about what was going on in America. And again, like, I felt like I didn't come out of it with a better understanding of those things, or a better understanding of America, or a better understanding of basketball, really. Someone doesn't know that much about basketball. A little bit about triangle offense, and not very much else. So the Fergie one, I guess he will feel comfortable with his son, but his son won't ask any difficult questions. And Fergie went on. I imagine he's going to ask him any difficult questions about the Glazers, or about pressuring young players to sign with his son, like in Michael Crick's The Boss documentary and book, or about any of the financial chicanery. I mean, at a level, it's not that interesting. If I want a documentary about Alex Ferguson, I do think it should be made to answer for those things, but I want detail about football. I want detail about speeches that you made. I want loads of that. And you're not going to be able to do that to the degree that I would love to read about it in 2 hours or whatever it is. So, I mean, I'll watch it. I'm absolutely certain I will enjoy every single second of it. But I also think I'll be sitting there saying, ask another question, or ask this question, or make me another 73 parts for me to watch immediately, one after the other, without sleeping. And yeah, I'm sure it'll be great, but I'm sure it won't be a scintilla as great as it should have been.
Daniel, great stuff. Thanks a million.
No worries, guys. See you again. Have a good day, everyone.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.